Welcome into another edition of the Raptors Pod Table Podcast. Gil McGregor joined by Carlin Gay. Carlin, what's up, man?
I'm good, G. It's been a while. I haven't been on the pod table in a little bit for obvious reasons. I've been too emotional about this season so far, but now's the time. Now's the time to come back with the potentially the most emotional 2 weeks of the season. Trade deadline's around the corner, my man.
Yeah, I know, man. You talk about it being an interesting time. We're coming right out of All-Star break, and trade deadline is 2 weeks from the day we're recording, Thursday, March 11th. Trade deadline this year is Thursday, March 25th, and it's already gotten spicy, like real spicy. We're talking like, I guess a couple weeks ago, we had the whole rumor about Kyle Lowry wanting to go home. His agent comes out and is like, nah, that's not true. What are you talking about? Then over All-Star break, we got another rumor coming out. Saying Kyle Lowry's telling people that his days are numbered as a Raptor, which didn't sound like him at all. So now here we are, Kyle Lowry's dispelling these rumors. There's a lot going on, but obviously it begs a question, like, what do we make of all this? Is there fire where there's smoke? Does Kyle Lowry have 2 weeks left as a Raptor? Is this his final season, a couple months left, or is he just going to play out the rest of his career as a Raptor? We know he's about to be 35 actually on trade deadline day. So it's a lot going on.
Yeah, it is. And I think there's a lot of different angles you can take at this, but I'll just give you my opinion. And so message to Raptor fans, stay out of my mentions. This is just my opinion. I really don't care what you guys think. You guys can argue with someone else. But we'll say this. I think that Kyle Lowry's days as Raptor is coming to an end. From the messaging that was put out over the last 2 weeks, whether you want to believe into the rumors or not, that's up to you. But also from his mouth and what he said in that press conference or that media availability yesterday really stood out to me. It was him already putting out into the universe that, you know, if any whatever happens, he's going to be looking forward to retiring as a Raptor. So that says to me that he's already prepared to play for another team at some point in his career. It didn't sound like a man that was saying that I want to be here no matter what, all the way to my end of my career. It sounded like a guy that said, I'm comfortable with going somewhere else to finish the end of my playing career, but just know that I'm going to come back to Toronto when the time is right, when it's time to retire, because I'll always be a Raptor at the end of the day. And I think some of the fan base took, you know, his words yesterday as, you know, him wanting to be a part of this franchise for the rest of his career. And I think another part of the, you know, fan base took it as the way I interpreted it, you know, that he is, comfortable with the fact that, hey, if it doesn't work out, I'm going to go play ball somewhere else and then I'll come back and get my jersey retired here. So I am leaning, I'm probably more of a pessimistic, guy anyway, cynic guy anyway. So I'm leaning more towards him being comfortable playing somewhere else. And I think that's going to happen sooner rather than later. I don't know if it's going to happen to the 25th deadline. I know that the great Michael Range of Sportsnet came out with the piece yesterday prior to Lowry's media availability saying that, Lowry's not going anywhere before March 25th. I still think that there is some realm of possibility that we see Kyle Lowry in another jersey. If it makes sense to make a trade, I don't know why you wouldn't if you're the Raptors organization, if a team blows you away with a deal. But him, you know, Grange coming out with that story and, Lowry coming out the way that he did makes me feel that the Raptors did try to move him and they've realized that there's not going to be a deal on the table that's going to blow them away right now. So why not shut it down and rock with what you have and try to compete in the playoffs? Now, next season is the big one. Next season, where he ends up next season is the big one, because you're looking at a guy that, as you said, is going to turn 35 this year, in a couple of weeks, actually. Yeah. And he ain't trying to take a pay cut. And that's right. A scary proposition to be in if you're the Toronto Raptors, because Lowry's been worth every penny of the $30 million that you've given him on average each year since he signed that deal. But is he going to be worth that 3 years from now if you assume that he wants to play another 3 years or another 2 years? I don't know. And, he hasn't seen any slippage from his production the last, we'll say, 4 years. But at some point, Father Time has proven to us, like, not everyone's Tom Brady, right? Not everyone's right. LeBron. Like, LeBron is redefining how we look at age. Not everybody's going to be that. Not everyone spends $1 million on their body to be able to perform at the high level. So I don't know. I'm skeptical about not Lowry's slippage, but when it does happen and when you're paying him like a max contract guy, that's where it gets scary.
Yeah, there's so many layers to that too. I think like looking at it, and I tend to be more on the optimistic side, but I really did look at what he said the same way you looked at it too. You know, a lot of like whatever happens, happens. A lot of you know, that's up to, you know, if I had a crystal ball, I would tell you what's going to go on. But I just want to win. I want to help this team win right now. You know, when it's all said and done, whatever, whatever. It made it feel like something has been explored, something was potentially in the works, but it just didn't make sense. And obviously, you have to factor in the fact that he's going to be a free agent this offseason. And you talk about him living up to the contract. He's averaging 18.7 assists and 5 rebounds, I think, this year. So it's not your normal 34, 35-year-old numbers, but at the same time, it's at a certain point, you know, that is going to fall off. But and on a similar token, at a certain point, he has to hand the reins off to the Fred VanVleets and the OG Anunobis and Pascal Siakam and potentially Norman Powell, depending on what happens with his contract situation, which is another discussion for another time. But still, all those things are kind of in play. And he mentioned as much in his presser as well. He mentioned, you know, he wants to see those guys succeed and, you know, passing the torch along to those guys. And that this isn't necessarily a team that is built to win a championship this year. And if they give Kyle Lowry a lot of money next year, that might hold them back from building towards becoming a championship team
It
again.
won't, gee, it won't might. It's going to hold them back. If they pay him, $30 million, it's going to hold them back. You just can't add. This team, as constructed, is not a championship team this year. Unless something drastic happens at the deadline or something happens that we don't see coming, the team that they have on paper right now, today, it's not a championship team. And if you pay Kyle Lowry the money that he's making right now or anywhere around that ballpark, it's going to just limit the options that you have to turn the team into a championship team. And it's not going to get there if you're looking to pay him that boatload of money.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, like, you know, it's very different from those guys like Kobe and Dirk, who got those big deals. Well, Dirk didn't get the big deal, but Kobe got the big deal at the end of his career that just was, you know, he'd earned that for being with them for 18 seasons. It's a little bit different with Kyle Lowry. And I guess that begs the question to me, like, letting him walk versus, you know, you mentioned, will you see something that blows you away at the deadline, that maybe helps you speed up that path to building a championship roster again? Like, what would you define as that? Because I know they mentioned Philadelphia, and like, again, Kyle Lowry's making $30 million, so you have to throw somebody like Danny Green in there to make the money match. But then it's like, are you looking at a young guy like a Tyrese Maxey or a Matisse Thybulle? Are these guys really moving the needle or making any type of difference? Because is it better having young talent than just having cap space? Because you can look at teams like the Knicks in years past or whatever, like, cap space is cool in theory, but it's not worth anything until you get somebody with it. So cap space, young talent, because I mean, those teams also could just bet on Kyle Lowry walking and then getting him for nothing in the offseason too. So all those things are in play, I feel like, too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little bit nervous to say, from a Raptor fan perspective, that cap space is great, because the last two off seasons we've seen them spend cap space on Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Stanley Johnson, Aaron Baines. You know, like, what are we, you know, what are we doing here with that, or that, you know, the space that they did have? So I'm not going to sit here and say that cap space is a great thing to have. Historically, Toronto hasn't been able to attract the big free agent yet. We haven't seen it yet. You know, the biggest free agents they've landed in the past, we're talking about Damari Carroll's near the top of the list. Like we're not talking about a LaMarcus Aldridge, who we'll get to at some point, who did have a meeting with the Raptors at, you know, the last time he was a free agent. And that was, you know, headline news for Raptor fans. The perception and the expectation for the team has changed since then. We're now a team that, you know, has a banner up at Scotiabank Arena. You know, that wasn't the case before. They were hanging, you know, division championship banners. You know, once you end up hanging that championship banner, the expectations and the mood around the franchise changes a lot. And sustained greatness has been, you know, this Raptor team. They've gotten to the playoffs. They've made some deep runs. And all that, it falls on the shoulders of Lowry. So if you're in the camp of wanting to reward him for all the success that he had with this franchise, and you want to, you know, give him that big payday, sort of like what you said, what Kobe got with the Lakers, then you are essentially saying that, hey, all right, it's more important to me to see Kyle Lowry be a Raptor than it is for me to watch this team compete for a championship in the next couple of years. And that championship is the key word there. It doesn't mean that they're not going to be a competitive bunch. I think they'll make the playoffs every single year if that was the case. But I just think that there is a ceiling to this team with if you're going to spend big money on a Kyle Lowry going forward. And I can't see Lowry deciding to take a pay cut because his services are going to be wanted by another team that's a little bit closer to reaching that championship goal than the Raptors are. And if you have an opportunity, if you're Kyle Lowry, you have an opportunity to not only get paid, but also go win a ring. Why not do that? Right? Like, why not do that? And then you always know that if you failed in doing so, well, one, you got paid, and two, you know, you can come back to a safe space in Toronto and get your jersey hung up. So it's not a big deal. So I am, like I said, if there was a deal that blew you away at the trade deadline, I'm pulling the trigger. I don't know what that deal is, but for me, that deal has to include not cap space, not anything else. It has to include a draft pick. There's no question about it. It has to include a draft pick. And we know that the Raptors have been able to find gems with their draft picks in years past. And it doesn't necessarily have to be lottery picks. You know, they won a championship with not a single lottery pick on the team. So we know that this team can you know, not only develop talent, but they can maximize talent and find places for that talent to really shine if they end up being in the 20s or late 20s with that draft pick. So I'd happily take a first round pick, you know, in exchange for a Kyle Lowry.
Yeah, and then that rules out one potential suitor in the Clippers who have no draft capital. I know the Sixers are another team, and it really just feels like everybody else, they are kind of strapped anyway, because, again, it's hard to make the money match with $30 million anyway. And then it's one thing to make the money match. It's another thing to make the deal work. And then, again, to your point, I think Kyle Lowry is at the point where he's valuing winning over, you know, a big payday. I think would Kyle Lowry take 22 to 25 million to go somewhere where he's the missing piece for a championship, or, you know, stay in Toronto and make $30 million and, you know, the cap is a second round exit? I feel like if it's in the best interest of both parties to where the Raptors can, you know, increase their ceiling with him leaving and he can increase his opportunity to win another championship, it works for both ways. And he's already won one in Toronto. He's undisputed greatest Raptor of all time. Great relationship with Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster. All those boxes are checked. So looking at it from that perspective, I think that ultimately trumps everything else as far as, you know, how is this going to happen with what happens. And maybe he does the team a favor in the offseason. We've seen it happen. You know, guys have organized deals other places and they've had sign and trades or what have you that makes the deal a little bit sweeter for the team that they leave. And all those factors are at play. So I guess the big question after all of this, March 25th, 3:30 p.m. since some things happen after the buzzer, is Kyle Lowry still a Raptor?
I think so. I think, you know, if it was up to me, if I was a GM in the situation, I think I would be aggressively trying to make a deal. But I also think that process had already happened for us to come to the conclusion where let's rock with the team we have. And I think that Lowry will be on the team, you know, beyond March 25th, get into the summer. And like you said, try to find a way to either, you know, get some assets back for him, because I expect him to leave the team. It sounds like they're trying to set everyone up for an eventual split, you know, the way that they're talking, both sides. And it just feels like you said, in a scenario where you do a sign and trade or something like that to try and get the assets back, work with each other to try and find a new destination for him. And then in the offseason, you don't have much pressure to really try and make it happen at the, you know, middle of the season. There's a lot of teams still in contention that really don't know what they have. I think there's teams out there that think that they might be a piece away from winning a championship and might not even need a piece. You know, they'll go through the deadline not making a deal, and all of a sudden they'll be in the finals, you know, competing for the LOB. And I don't know if the Raptors are in that boat yet. I think the Raptors are a step below a few teams in the Eastern Conference, not a huge step below, you know, but they are a step below. And that step below, as we know in Raptor history, is a giant step when you're talking in terms of championship. It is, I just contradicted myself saying it's not a huge step below, but it is a giant step below between championship contender and then, you know, playoff contender. And I think they're in the playoff contender class. And there is no Kawhi Leonard or Danny Green that you can add to this team that's going to come and save the day. And maybe, you know, they add some pieces that, you know, collectively can raise this team's ceiling, but I still don't see them as a championship team. So I think that you're looking towards the offseason for Lowry to move him. I think that he'll work with the team. They'll find a home for him somewhere he wants to end his career. And then also somewhere where the Raptors can get back some assets and try to build around the core of a Fred VanVleet, a Siakam, and an OG Anunoby going forward.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, where they are right now, 17 and 19 at the All-Star break or coming out of the All-Star break, right in that log jam of teams between like 4 and 10 in the Eastern Conference. So it's very tight right now. And I guess based off the premise that Lowry will still be with the team, what can they do to sweeten his what could be his last run as a Raptor? I know we mentioned before LaMarcus Aldridge is a guy who I think it was 2015 was made a visit to Toronto. Now he and the Spurs have mutually agreed to part ways. Naturally, with the front court issues the Raptors have had this year, there's been some conversations linking him, and then there's been some other names out there like PJ Tucker. Trevor Ariza is a guy who is technically with the Thunder. If you didn't know that, he's with the Thunder. So there's your cheat answer for who he play for. He has not reported to the team. Again, mutual decision, but he could get bought out or traded at the deadline as well. So I guess really the focus is LaMarcus Aldridge. Do you think he's a guy who could raise the ceiling for this Raptors team, answer some front court issues, not necessarily make them a title team, but maybe they could have a sneaky run, have some matchups go their way to where they can have a memorable postseason this year?
I think so. Well, there's two things though that I'm a little bit worried about. One is, you know, with Aldridge on the team, I still don't think they're best five. And that's, you know, eliminating the fact that they would lose anybody. I'm assuming they get him off the buyout market. So with him on the team, I still don't think that their best five includes Aldridge. When you put their crunch time lineup out there, I don't know if I see LaMarcus Aldridge on the floor for the Raptors in a crunch situation. So how much does he really move the needle? You're talking about, you know, what he does with the second unit or in minutes when, you know, the main guys aren't out there. And for players of that caliber, I mean, those aren't championship, you know, needle movers. So those are guys that maybe you win an extra game or two in a series. I don't know if you win a championship with that level of player, but I do think there's some positive offensively. We know from the last since Kawhi Leonard has left, and even prior to him arriving, we know that in the playoffs, the Raptors have always struggled in the half court in terms of scoring. That was always the problem, and Kawhi eliminated that. Kawhi gave him somebody that could get you a bucket against the best defenses in the league, no matter what. And if he couldn't get you a bucket, he was going to get you a good shot because he was attracting so much attention when he had the ball in his hands. There was no one on this team that can attract a double team, or that, you know, another team says we got to get the ball out of his hands. Don't care how hot he is. Fred VanVleet scored almost 60 points, and the Magic did not double him once. You know, Pascal Siakam has had big games in the past, and teams aren't rushing to double him. They may double him because they know that he's going to cough it up in a post scenario, but it's not a doubling out of desperation like you would get from, you know, go-to players. You know, you could name the top 10 guys in the league. They attract certain attention defensively. No one on the Raptors has that right now. I don't know that LaMarcus Aldridge is still that type of player, but I know that you can dump it down inside to him, and he is going to get you a good shot against one-on-one coverage in the post. Is he, you know, can you dump it down to him 10 times a game and he's going to try and get you 20? You know, probably not at this stage in his career, but the Raptors have had problems and gone through long stretches in playoff games when the defense really tightens their screws at finding easy shots and easy looks. And I think Aldridge would give you an opportunity to get an easy bucket, or at least an easy look when he's on the floor. And Aaron Baines is not doing that. Boucher is not doing that in the front line. So I think that's where it changes. Defensively, obviously, you're going to have the question marks because he wasn't the greatest lockdown defender to begin with. And now he's old. So, and you know that Raptor system isn't easy to comprehend, as we've seen with Aaron Baines. Aaron Baines,
especially on the floor,
was Aaron Baines was said to be a really good defender. You know, in his prior stops in Boston, he did a great job defensively, and at Phoenix as well. And now he's in Toronto, and sometimes he looks like he's never played basketball before. Practice time just isn't going to be there for Aldridge to get up to speed defensively. So he's already going to be behind the eight ball there. Plus, he's not a, you know, top end defender, so that's going to be tough. So they gain offensively, they would lose defensively with him on the floor. So overall, I think when you look at the best five that they could put on the floor, it's not going to include Aldridge. So I don't think that puts him in a, you know, championship sort of contention. It might win one or two extra games in the series, but it's not going to move the needle that much.
Yeah, and then that's the tricky part too, because I do kind of feel like he and his camp have to realize that too, right? Like, ultimately, when you see guys get bought out, and I don't think a trade would make much sense because of what it would take to match the salaries. When a guy gets bought out, he's probably not eyeing, you know, the seventh, eighth seed that's a couple games or hovering around 500. We've seen in the past, and I don't necessarily know if he's not players of his caliber. Like the most recent example I can think of is when Wayne Ellington joined the Pistons as a buyout candidate. But there's going to be, the Lakers are going to come knocking, and there are going to be some other teams as well, that the Clippers and the Spurs, the Clippers and the Nets probably have come knocking as well if he gets bought out, to where the Raptors might not necessarily be high on his priority list if that tends to happen. And hearing it that way, knowing that it sounds like it raises your floor a little more, not necessarily your ceiling, and knowing that if you want to lean into a small ball with those guys and maybe you just try and go a different direction, or again, just ride it out with the way you have it and see what happens there.
Yeah, I would do that. I think your best five is still going to always be your small ball. I think you have to find a way if everyone's healthy, you have to find a way to get Norman Powell on the floor in crunch minutes. Like there's no question in my mind that he shouldn't be, the seasons he's having, he's having an incredible season. If they don't make a move before a deadline, and I think that he'd be the guy that is the only guy that they have out there that's worth anything to move, outside of obviously the untouchables. I'm talking about, and if Lowry's off the table, then your next best thing to move that's going to get you back something to maybe increase this team's ceiling is Norman Powell. You could put Aaron Baines and Dangelo out there. He's having he's not having the great, he's played better lately. He's played better lately. But yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone's, clamoring to have Aaron Baines on the roster at this time. So, and Boucher, say what you want about him, he's having an incredible year. I don't think you give that up, especially the team-friendly contract he's on. So get him out of there. What are you left with? Terrence Davis? I don't think people aren't picking up the phone to get Terrence Davis on their team. So it really comes down to Powell. And the reason why a team would do that or if another team other than Raptors would do that is because they know they're going to give him the big deal at the end of the year and try to resign him, get him in the building, get him, in a role and see what you can do that way, kind of sell them that way. But I if this team stays the same, their best five lineup, it has to be with Norman Powell on the floor. And that would leave a LaMarcus Aldridge kind of on the outside looking in.
Yeah. Yeah. LaMarcus is one of a couple guys who've been mentioned in trade talks. Like I said earlier, I know Andre Drummond's a guy who's been out there for a while, but
he's always linked to the Raptors. You say Andre Drummond, it didn't matter when it was going to be, it was draft day all the way up until now. He's always going to be linked to the Raptors. And I don't know if he finally ends up coming, and he would be an interesting candidate for me to enter that realm of, hey, who's the best five in a close game. And does that include an Andre Drummond? But again, he's not a bad defender. I think he gets a bad rap for being a bad defender. He's not a bad defender, but he's going to have to learn the system. And, when you have four guys, if you think of that four lineup plus the Drummond, it'll be, obviously the backcourt of Van Vliet and Lowry, you have Siakam and an OG. Those four guys know, they could close their eyes and play blindfolded defensively. They know when to switch. They know when to tag. They know when to hit someone. You add an Andre Drummond who's not going to be sure, who's going to be hesitant in those moments. And we've seen it with the Raptors defense this year. That's why they're sitting, I think, 18th right now in defensive efficiency. It always seems like four guys know what they're doing, but that last guy doesn't. And whether it's Stanley, whether it's, Boucher being a little bit too aggressive, looking to block a shot, whether it's, Baines, who just doesn't know where he needs to be. Multiple guys. Matt Thomas just not really a great defender, so you can't play him too much. So multiple guys go on there with four other guys, or it seems like three guys know what they're doing and two guys don't. It's lack of practice time, and it really has shown up this year, especially on the defensive end.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Ultimately, like the opportunity cost of what it would take, and the buyout market is so different from the trades. And if you're curious about what it would take to bring in an Andre Drummond or LaMarcus Aldridge, our Scott Rafferty over on NBA.com has got it outlined. A lot of trade packages, ideas, and potential destinations for those guys as well, some other guys leading up to the trade deadline. Also on NBA.com, we've got plenty of stuff for the second half of the season. Some big Raptors storylines. They're back in action Thursday. Today, March 11th, they are back at home, or home.
Are they really back? There's like five guys out.
That is true. That is true. Fred VanVleet, OG Anunoby, Pascal Siakam, Malachi Flynn, and Patrick McCall remain out due to the league's health and safety protocol. Said it before, can't really speculate on what was a positive test or what's contact tracing. don't necessarily know how that works, but those guys have been out since before All-Star break. There was a game postponed. They're still out. So you get back to action, but you're down five guys, three starters. Not a great start to the second half of the season, especially when you're behind the eight ball, two games under 500, and you're looking to stay in the playoff picture and avoid being in the play-in tournament.
Yeah, it's it is tough. Part of I don't want to say a good thing, but you know, there is a benefit to, you know, having played Atlanta out of, you know, first team out of the gate. You know, it's, you know, there, that's a winnable game. Obviously, you know, with five of your top end talent out of the lineup, or at least five of your rotation guys out of the lineup, it's going to be tough. There's going to be a lot of pressure on a Lowry, you know, to step up, a Norman Powell to step up. But at least they get their coach back, you know. Nurse is back in the fold, so at least you have your coaching staff back. That helps a little bit. And maybe he comes with a brand new perspective that he really didn't have prior to leaving. You know, the season's flying by. Like, I don't think people realize how fast this thing is going. It feels like just yesterday we were talking about, Malachi Flynn down in Charlotte killing it. And now, we're post All-Star break. And it's when you're in it, when you're in that mode and you don't have the practice time, I don't think Nick Nurse has been able to take that step back to really see, hey, what does this team need? And he's been trying to try different things on the fly, and maybe, you know, sitting out and watching them from afar, maybe he's coming back with a new perspective of, all right, these are things we can fix internally without even having to make any moves at the deadline. And these are things that we could be better at. And these are things I need to emphasize. And maybe I give an extra minute to some of the bench guys that I've been pulling early. Different things there might kind of change them a little bit. So I'm interested to see how he has changed, with the unexpected, break that he had the last 2 weeks almost. So that will be interesting to see. And then, like I said, Atlanta, this might be the perfect team that the Raptors could start with, because winnable game. B, they have a coaching situation. You know, they just fired their coach. That's true. Looking at a situation where, in the middle of the season, they're not happy with the where they are, and Lloyd Pierce is gone. So now, the Raptors might be able to catch a sleep, a quick win here on a team that, on paper, with the roster that the Raptors have, should beat them, especially at the crib. So it is a I don't want to say a fortunate draw for them, because you never want to see these type of circumstances happen at any level for any team. But it could be worse, having to play Detroit. I know they lost against Detroit. That it could have been worse.
Smoked.
The last three games, it could have been worse. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You mentioned the Hawks are also shorthanded, too. They're down Reddish, down DeAndre Hunter, who are two important contributors. So it's not like they're at full strength on top of everything they have going on. And you mentioned that. It's interesting to look. Raptors enter the second half of the season. They play 36 games in around 65 or 66 days, which is nuts. But that's the schedule ahead of them. Knock on wood, there's no more postponements this year. But then I looked at it. They play the Hawks, Hornets, Bulls to get back to action. So it could be a much worse draw than those three teams. They're all winnable games. Interestingly enough, they're all around each other in the standings right now as well. I think the Raptors have the same record as the Bulls, like a half game or a game behind the Hornets. And again, they're 17-19 right now, two games out of fourth. So it's not like, they're at the risk of falling completely out of the playoff picture, and they can't, they're at a point of no return. It's just a matter of keeping your head above water, staying afloat right now, and taking advantage of some winnable games despite the circumstances.
Yeah, and also trying to, play through the next 2 weeks, which are going to be filled with rumors for so many teams. There's so many teams that are going to go through slumps because there's going to be so many trade rumors around their locker room. And hopefully the Raptors are able to kind of quiet that noise, because people are still going to be talking about Lowry. People are going to be definitely talking about what the heck's going to happen at Norman Powell. and between now and then, the Raptors will play, by my math, close to eight games, right? So that's a lot of games in 2 weeks. To try and stay in the playoff picture and keep your focus on the court and really, win the games that you should win. You mentioned that it's a couple of, I don't want to call them easy games, because no NBA game is easy, but winnable games. you know, they can't let some of these games slip, especially because the East is so bunched up. The other thing is, once you get out of that, we'll call it the easy stretch, it's tough. It is tough after that. 36 games left, as you mentioned. According to Tankathon, they have the eighth toughest schedule going forward. They still got to play the Jazz twice. They still got to play the Lakers twice. They still have a date with the Suns and the Nets, which is no joke. They still got to play the Clippers twice, correct?
Yeah.
So it's the Portland's still on there. You know, they still have trips to make out west to Denver, Utah. It is a tough schedule ahead. So the winnable games, like, yeah, the losing to Detroit, I don't care who plays, you can't let that happen again.
Yeah.
And you got to get those wins and try to keep the noise out of your locker room, especially over the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that too. And that's kind of, feel like that was really like a part of the identity of teams of years past. They won the games they're supposed to win. There were some bad losses, and I feel like I said this before, there were some bad losses along the way. One that stands out, they got blown out in Cleveland the championship year. But for the most part, this team always takes care of business. And you look back and it's like, oh, it's not impressive wins, but it adds up to your record. You look at teams, and I'm sure you could look at the teams now this year that are, you know, towards the top of the Eastern and the Western Conference. They're taking care of business against lesser opponents. They're not getting blown out by the Pistons. They're not giving up 130 points to the Kings at home and doing things like that. So that's a big part of the Raptors need to get their act together. Another big thing about these games, like I said, again, they're right next to these teams in the standings. They've already won the season series with the Hornets. Have not played the Bulls yet, but if they lose to the Hawks, then they've lost that season series too. So if it comes down to tiebreakers late in the year, hopefully you don't hope to be next to these teams in the standings, but that could come into play, because, you know, you're not playing teams four times this year. You're playing them three. There's going to be a clear winner and loser of every series. So that's another thing to keep an eye on the second half of the season, the way the schedule shakes down.
Yeah, and the percentage, win percentage, is going to matter a lot.
Yeah.
Because not every team, it doesn't feel like every team is going to get to that 72-game mark. So you want to make sure that you take care of your business, because right now this team is under 500. They're in a playoff picture, but who knows? They're a couple win percentage points, from slipping down to, you know, 10th, and then having to go on the road for that play-in tournament game. It's very fickle in the Eastern Conference, and if you don't know, many people don't know what's going to happen with the rest of the season here, and if games are end up being postponed, you want to make sure that the ones that you should win, you took care of, because you don't want to look back at the end of the season if they end up playing 72 games and say, well, we should have beat the Pistons on this night, or we should have beat the Cavaliers on this night. So that's going to be important going forward. There's a lot of teams bunched up, as we said, and I think we're all looking at, games played and loss column, but we also need to start looking at the win percentage column and realize that not everyone's going to get to 72, and that's going to be so important if there are, decisions to be made where we eliminate some games so we can get to the end of the season.
Yeah. You mentioned, like, I thought about it as soon as you said looking back and wish you can get one back. There are like a handful of games I could think about from the first half of the season that this Raptors team probably wishes they could get back. But Here they are now, looking at the second half of the season. All starts again Thursday, March 11th, 7:30 p.m. at Amalie Arena. They take on the Atlanta Hawks on TSN. Then they are on the road, Charlotte and Chicago. Charlotte is Saturday, March 13th. 7 p.m. on Sportsnet, and again over on NBA.com, we'll got you covered with preview content as well as live blogs, takeaways from each of those games, full coverage, as well as everything leading up to the trade deadline, the latest rumors, any names that are mentioned, all of that over on NBA.com. again,
before we end, a quick shout out to the women that are going to be broadcasting the game against the Nuggets. My girl Megan,
March 24th, I think.
Yeah, March 24th, my girl Megan McPeak, so happy and excited for her to have that opportunity. Kayla Gray, she knows what it is. That's family. Kate Burness, she's awesome. Worked with her in the past, and she's always been good to me every time I see her. I never got a chance to meet Amy, but she's great on the broadcast, on the Raptors 9-5 broadcast, and also CBL broadcast. She's been incredible there. And I feel like I'm forgetting someone else. Kia Nurse. Nurse. Shout out to Kia, man. Like she's been also great to me every time I've had an opportunity to talk to her. So, but I am extremely, I'm a little bit biased because I'm closer to Megan than, and Kayla than the other girls, but those two phenomenal talents, and I'm so excited for Megan to get the opportunity to call an NBA game, and Just a great job by the Raptors organization to allow this to happen and really set a standard, a high bar for hopefully the rest of the NBA teams to follow and sporting leagues to follow as well.
Yeah, for sure. Like you said, hopefully we see this is the first example of many that we see doing that. And another remark on Kia Nurse, just a star on both sides now, like seeing her doing pregame content. And also now she's with the Phoenix Mercury and is going to be a big part of their team as well. So seeing her star on both sides and setting up the post career during a career is really cool to see. So I'm excited to look forward to that broadcast. And it should be a pretty good game, too.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. No doubt.
For sure. So again, leading up to that, we'll have more on the Raptors pod table. Thanks again for tuning in. Make sure to subscribe. Great feedback on all of that as well. For Carlin Gay, I'm Gil McGregor. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for tuning in.